And this also seems to have been the case with the cult in Asia Minor. Cybele is worshipped in a number of cities where she is often identified with Rhea, the mother of Zeus, sometimes with Hera, and she assumes very much a Hellenic guise, and some of the earlier rites and traditions that go back to this primitive past are toned down. Dealing with these cults, one way of looking at how the gods are changed is to look at the cult statues themselves. This has been cleverly done in a number of studies, and you can line up the stone copies of the cult statues, and usually cult statues were in wood, and they were oiled and preserved so that you have this sort of black-colored wood. This would be very similar to Madonnas known from Europe or from Latin America in the Catholic tradition. And these cult statues would be dressed up in a cosmos, in a costume, and they get increasingly elaborate over the course of the Roman Empire. These cult statues would be dressed up. They would be paraded around on high holidays. They were also installed in the theaters, usually as the climax to a festival. And anyone who has grown up in a city such as New Orleans is familiar with the social and political interchange of these festivals. It allowed the elites to get deference from the lower classes because they sponsored these shrines, they sponsored these parades. A cult statue would often be conveyed at certain points along the way through the city. One group, perhaps the Guild of Cloth Weavers, would take it. It would then be sent over to the silversmiths. Gifts were handed out in the name of the divinity, usually by a couple who were the leading magistrates, priest and priestess of the city. We have some dramatic cases of this from inscriptions. Ultimately, the whole festival climaxed with a massive celebration. Sacrifices, that meant sacrificial meats, that meant food, that meant wine, often taking place in the theater or in some cases in an open air area around an altar. But what those festivals did was bind the various classes, the various groups of a city in the common worship to the divinity. And they were a very powerful religious force. They invoked the divinity for protection of the city, for the perpetuation of the family, for fertility, for crops. And these rites had been played out for centuries, for millennia in Asia Minor, and they're being played out on a grand scale in the Roman age. The cult statues are ever more elaborate. The festivals are ever longer. We actually have several inscriptions, one found relatively recently, that lays out in an endowment exactly how a festival should proceed. And it is a remarkably detailed account. Essentially, 30 days are set aside with days for worship, days for games, days for tax-free fairs, markets. All of this clearly laid out an inscription that came to light in the time of Hadrian from a little town called Oinawanda, which is today represented by a small village at the base of a mountain. The Roman city is actually up in the mountain. It has a theater, maybe 3,000 can be seated there. And the current town is so small that it doesn't even have a mosque. Yet in the Roman age, this was a city with an endowed festival that could run for a month. So it's a testimony to the prosperity and the worship of the gods of Asia Minor in the Roman age. As I mentioned in the last lecture, Roman emperors very assiduously courted the ancient shrines. They added to these festivals, and they did this in a variety of ways. One was, of course, associating the image of the emperor and the imperial family with all the native gods. There was no symbol more powerful than the gods of a city, the gods of a community. And inserting the emperor in the temples of the gods and associating the emperor with the worship of the gods was the most powerful political statement you could make. And in this sense, the emperors were following very well-traveled territory of Macedonian kings in the Hellenistic age and of the Hittite emperors in the Bronze Age, who seem to have attempted the same of inserting themselves in the various festivals of their Hurrianized divinities. On the other hand, the emperors had other ways of increasing their presence and the dignity of the cults. One was to award what were known as sacred games, or in some cases imperial games, to various cities. That is to turn a local game into a game equivalent to one of the four great pan-Hellenic games. Notably, the Pythian Games held at Delphi and the Olympian Games at Olympia. There was a cycle of pan-Hellenic games, the Nemean, Pythian, Isthmian, and Olympic Games. And in some cases, this proved an enormous boon to the city. The town of Hierapolis, which I mentioned was an Anatolian shrine that reinvented itself as a city in the 2nd century BC, that city gained Pythian status for its cult. Its cult was associated with Apollo, with an oracle. The temple was rebuilt on a grand scale with a theater. And Antonine and Severan emperors, that is, rulers of the 2nd and early 3rd century AD, showered gifts on Herapolis and on the cult because that cult was now seen as equivalent to the Pythian games of Delphi. Herapolis's god was on par with the Apollo of Delphi, which is a pretty good deal, and you could expect enormous amount of business and entertainment to follow in its wake. And Herapolis does enjoy a boon in the late 2nd and 3rd century as a result of that.